Coming up, Rabbi Akiva Tatz and deeper insights about Rosh Hashanah. Welcome to 613 Books Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Dean. And if you like to read a variety of books with authentic Jewish values, we read you loud and clear. How many times have you heard or asked that timeless question, read any good books lately? Well, in just a little while, we'll check in with author and artist Leanne Wakabayashi and find out what's on her reading table. But first, my featured guest this week is Rabbi Akiva Tatz. He's written a number of books on the subject of Jewish thought and philosophy, including Anatomy of a Search, World Mask, The Thinking Jewish Teenager's Guide to Life, Living Inspired, Will, Freedom, and Destiny, As Dawn Ends the Night, and most recently, Shabbat and the Festivals, Journey and Destination. Welcome to 613 Books Podcast, Rabbi Akiva Tatz.
Thank you very much, Heather. Thanks for having me on your podcast. Thanks to Greg, your excellent engineer in the background.
Great. Okay. So we are talking about Rosh Hashanah, and I'd like to talk a bit about Malchut. One of the aspects of our focus on Rosh Hashanah is Malchut. On a basic level, we understand that Rosh Hashanah is the coronation of the king, our true Melech, Hashem. The Midah quality of Malchut is explored in detail in your Sefer Shabbat and the Festivals. And on page 154, you write that, quote, Malchut assembles all the parts and reveals their totality. When the parts of a structure come together to show its purpose and goal, when all the events in a sequence come together at their end to reveal the meaning of the whole, Malchut manifests. And in your classic Sefer Living Inspired, you write that, quote, the root of creation is Hashem's kingship, and so too is the root of all spiritual growth. This realization is the most primary of all on Rosh Hashanah, and it requires a delving into the deepest level of ratzon, desire, during the prayer service to reach the consciousness of and desire for Hashem's complete rule. So my question is, with the connections between Malchut and totality, completeness, this gives us a lot to ponder about during the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. So what do you recommend on a basic level that we have in mind as we focus on completeness and Hashem's kingship?
Okay, of course, that's the most important question. And I would say this, the main focus of Rosh Hashanah is to understand that there's one single simple goal, and that's to get back to the root. Malchut, as you put it, really is a totality of the agenda being fulfilled. What we do in Rosh Hashanah is we go back to the stating of the agenda in the beginning. Let me express it like this. The work of Rosh Hashanah is not tshuva. Before Rosh Hashanah, we prepare with tshuva. After Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a frenzy of tshuva for all the details. Rosh Hashanah is much more basic than that. You know, perhaps the best way to put it, Heather, is this. Why are we not doing tshuva on Rosh Hashanah when our lives hang in the balance? And more strange, we leave it till 10 days later at the last minute, and then we try to do tshuva. It's like trying to win a case on appeal and not trying to win the case initially. But here's the answer. Rosh Hashanah is much deeper than tshuva. On Rosh Hashanah, we're not looking at the details. We're simply looking at the root, the essence of what you are. And therefore, the meaning of Rosh Hashanah is a retreat, if you like. It's a return to the original self way before the details begin. You know, the day of Rosh Hashanah is really an anniversary of the creation of the human being. And like all festivals, every festival is an anniversary, a replaying, a reenacting of what happened on this day originally. And what happened on this day originally was the creation of the human being. And the debate, shall he be created? Shall they be created? Shall they not be created? Which the angels debated on this day is replayed every Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, the essence of the day is one thing only. Will you be recreated? Will you not be? And therefore, a person who spends Rosh Hashanah doing tshuva is missing the point big time. You've got Yom Kippur for that. You know, let me give you an analogy. If you have 5 minutes to speak to your boss, you can stand in front of that desk and speak to the CEO of your company 5 minutes a year. If you spend the 5 minutes negotiating a better salary and a new company car and bigger expenses, you're missing the point. There's only one thing to explore in those 5 minutes. Do you have a job next year? That's all. After that, you can harangue your boss for 10 days with emails about all the conditions. So Rosh Hashanah is a return to the agenda. But let me take another minute just to say it like this. Rosh Hashanah has three components only. Malchiyos, Malchiyot, right? That's Hashem, your king. Zichronot, which means let's go back and recall that. Zikaron is the same gematria as Zara, which means go back to the seed. No accident that the word Zikaron is the same root as Zachar, which means a male. That's where the pregnancy began. You're going back to the origin itself. And shofar takes you back to the absolutely primal level. You know, the meaning of the shofar is a cry, inarticulate scream. And the reason is because once the words are developed, you can always be misunderstood. But there's no misunderstanding the meaning of a scream of a child in the night. And therefore, the shofar takes you back. The meaning of the word shofar is shofar, to improve, le shaper. Shapir is beautiful. And shafir means the amniotic membranes and fluid in which the baby is developed. So it takes you back. May shafir takes you back to the primordial waters, waters of the original mikveh, of the original creation, of the flood, of the Jewish people being born in an ocean. In Kabbalah, it's written that when the ocean splits and the Jewish people are born, it's a woman's waters breaking in birth. So the shofar takes you all the way back to that primordial level. And therefore, it's not a day for tshuva. That's not the point. Hashem's not looking at the branches of the tree. He's looking only at where the tree's planted. And the only focus we need on Rosh Hashanah is, who are you? What are you here to represent?
Thank you so much for that. I've definitely heard that you say in several lectures on Rosh Hashanah, you say tshuva, not one word. It just really sticks with me. And I remember that also on Rosh Hashanah, not one word.
Yeah, not one word of request or tshuva. It's only assertion, Hashem, you the king. The Arizal says you shouldn't ask for anything on Rosh Hashanah.
Mm. And what does that mean? You mean no personal requests?
Yes. The point is that once you start asking for personal requests, first of all, singling yourself out is dangerous. It's the nation that is important. And therefore, if you want to assure life for the year, the only way to do it is, Hashem, you're king, I'm here to represent that. You know, Heather, the Gemara says you can offer Hashem a bribe on Rosh Hashanah, incredibly. What's the bribe? You can say, Hashem, you don't need me to make the sunshine, you don't need me to make the rainfall, but there's one thing you need me for. En melech meloam. There's no nation without a king, and therefore you need us. You need us to manifest your kingship in the world. Let's talk business. That's all you do, and therefore, Hashem, you king. No requests, no tshuva, no vidui, no ashamnu bagadnu, only one simple statement of the basic agenda. Here, Hashem, you king, and you need me. Let me share with you, if I may, just one brief insight into this, which I think is too exquisite to miss. If I'm not mistaken, it's the Taz who says, why do we say melocha al kol ha'olam kulo? Why do we say kol twice? Melocha al kol ha'olam kulo, why do you? And here's his beautiful answer. He says, if we said, Hashem, we want you to rule the whole world, we might mean a majority. Why? Because in halakha, a majority is definitive. You know, 51%, good enough. 51% on your sukkah, good enough. Which means if we said, Hashem, we want you to rule the whole world, we might mean 51%. And therefore, on Rosh Hashanah, we say, we don't mean that. We don't only mean the majority. We don't even mean Jews. We mean every single branch and fiber of that original Adamic personality. We're going back to the root of what it is to be human. And therefore, on Rosh Hashanah, we mean not just us, not just the majority. We mean every Zulu cattle herder and every New York stockbroker and every teenager painting her nails black with silver glitter. You know, we mean everybody.
Right. I do want to also get to back to the idea, you know, that Rosh Hashanah, it's the Yom HaDin, the Day of Judgment. We don't take this lightly, even though it's a day of celebration and feasting. And the importance of joy and celebration on festivals is explored in your Sefer Shabbat and the festivals. You cite a description from the Sfas Emes on page 99 that, quote, joy is the experience of taking each element of life from its origin to its correct final place. One experiences real joy when one's deeds are attached to their root and in setting each thing into place. So my question is, we appreciate that it's the Yom HaDin, and yet we're fully aware that the days of Rosh Hashanah are days of joy. What do you tell people who struggle with the severity of judgment and still try to celebrate the opportunities that come with newness and beginnings?
I would say the basic approach to that is that human beings are capable and indeed should have mixed emotions. You know, we can feel many emotions at the same time, and that's appropriate. We say, for example, Gil U Bir Ada, which means when you're speaking to Hashem, you should rejoice in trembling. What does that mean? Well, it means when you're knocking on the door of someone who could change your life, don't you feel two emotions at the same time? You feel, whoa, this is an amazing opportunity. It's exhilarating. On the other hand, whoa, you know, lest this go wrong. And therefore, when you're speaking to Hashem, those two emotions are richly mixed. And Rosh Hashanah is exactly that. It's an incredible opportunity to revise your whole past. It's a whole total recreation and a new beginning, but it's awesomely fearsome by the same token. And therefore, there's no contradiction. One should feel the yomim noiroim, which means they are awesome. Indeed, that's exactly what the emotion that should be evoked. On the other hand, there's tremendous rejoicing in the opportunity to be reborn.
Very nice. We will end it there with being reborn, hopefully for the good. And I wish you a Shana Tova, Rabbi Akiva Tatz. And I want to thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and many insights about Rosh Hashanah, especially from your recent Sefer, Shabbat, and the festivals, Journey and Destination.
Thank you, and best wishes for a wonderful year to you and all your listeners.
Rabbi Akiva Tatz founded the Jerusalem Medical Ethics Forum, of which he is director, for the purpose of teaching and promoting knowledge of Jewish medical ethics internationally. He currently lectures on Jewish thought and medical ethics at the Jewish Learning Exchange in London, where he has been based for more than 20 years. He is also a regular speaker for Olami. For more information about Rabbi Akiva Tatz and to purchase your copy of Shabbat and the Festivals, check out the show notes to this episode.
And now it's time to find out what is on the reading table of today's Jewish movers and shakers.
And on the line to tell us about one of the books on her reading table is Leanne Grunberg Wakabayashi. As both a painting teacher inspired by nature and a roaming reporter who loves to put a spotlight on exceptional Torah luminaries, Leanne dedicates her book review to its co-author, Rabbi Leo D., who lost his beloved wife and two of their daughters in a terrorist attack earlier this year. All right, Leanne, tell us, what's on your reading table?
Hi, Heather. On my reading table are two wonderful companion books of ecological commentary from a Torah perspective, Eco-Bibles, Parts 1 and 2. It's mind-boggling to find out that global warming has a solution, and it's in the Torah. Rabbis Yonatan Neril and Leo D. teamed up to create this amazing anthology of rabbinic wisdom, covering everything from the shrinking of the Dead Sea to animal rights. It's so easy to feel hopeless and like we can't individually make a difference. But when I grasp that protecting the earth and all living things on it is actually enshrined in Torah, I feel this surge of energy, a call to action. I'll give you an example with this quote from Echo Bible by Rabbi Neril. When people use the physical world as a means to serve God, they will almost certainly consume less because they will realize what their true needs are. Wow, by serving God, we're consuming less. Eco Bible is going to stay on the top of my reading stack for a while to come.
Thanks, Leanne, for telling us about this incredible book. Leanne Grunberg Wakabayashi is a Jerusalem Post magazine feature writer and author and founding director of Genesis Art Workshops of Israel and Japan. If you want to get in touch with Leanne about any of her projects, you will find her contact information in this episode's show notes. And while you're there, our show notes also include links to more details about Rabbi Tatz's new Sefer, as well as links to purchase your own copy. Also, we've included a link to Rabbi Tatz's website. It's all there for you in the show notes. And that's what's on the shelf for this episode of 613 Books Podcast. I'm Heather Dean. Thanks for listening.
613 Books Podcast is produced and hosted by Heather Dean. Senior producer and director of operations, Greg Cohen. Consulting producer, Yisca Roth. Show announcer, Michael Doniger. Remember to like and subscribe to our show on your favorite app, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your own preferred app, and never miss an episode. You can find all episodes of 613 Books Podcast by visiting our website, heatherdeanproductions.com.